Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, the mysterious text-based handler for Mr. Jason Snell.
Or am I?
Dun, dun, dun.
Imposters. Imposters, yes. Scott. Imposters.
There are imposters all over the place. Of course, we're talking about Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 5, Imposters.
Or are we?
I don't know. We could be talking about... we are. I don't know what else we would be talking about.
I don't know. Some changeling episode.
I think we should continue our tradition of telling people how we felt about the episode before we talk about the episode, because I thought, once again, this is a very strong episode of Star Trek Picard. I enjoyed it greatly. Lots of stuff happened. They answered things. I was like, hey, wait a second. Right at the beginning, which always pleases me. But what did you think, Jason?
I agree. I thought it was very good. I saw somebody say, well, it wasn't the best episode of the year. And I'm like, well, okay, what does that mean? Last week's episode was great. Last week's was probably the best episode. This was merely a very, very, very good episode of Star Trek. So I'll take it. I'm not going to worry about whether it eclipsed, you know, was it a tenth of a point higher than, I don't know how to compare that. It's obviously starting a new direction from the rest of the season, but yeah, I thought I thought it was great.
And I think they figured out, or excuse me, now I'm no TV expert, Jason, but it seems to me that they have figured out a solution to something that has plagued Picard in the previous seasons. And once again, I should say, before anyone tries to send me an email, I enjoyed both seasons of Picard previously, although now people might be wanting to send me emails because they're going to tell me how bad the previous seasons were, but I like them overall. But the problem they seem to have is that they wanted to have this overarching kind of story, which they did, but they didn't really, like, they didn't serve it out appropriately.
Yeah, or
they
didn't have enough
steam.
Yeah, yes. Or they didn't have enough to, and so they had to fill. Whereas it feels now with this story like there is so much story to tell that five episodes in, I'm a little worried about if they have enough time to tell the whole story. So, yeah.
We'll see. I mean, it is hard to judge, but so far they've been, and I think it's smart of them to kind of have the first four episodes are not a fully contained story, but it's like it's a satisfying unit of entertainment, I feel like.
Yes.
Because we got a conclusion to that one story, although I think Vedic will be back. And it kind of, you know, it leads to the next thing. So it's related, but it's not completely, you're not like completely lost if you just start here. Although you shouldn't start with episode five of Picard, please.
No, I think for modern TV, what you really ideally want is a feeling of satisfaction when you're done. That you don't feel like you have literally sort of dropped in the middle of a chapter and then left in the middle of the chapter, especially if you have to then wait a week for the next part of the chapter. And I think that the show has done pretty well, and in the last couple of episodes very well, in feeling like I have gotten a satisfying, exciting hour of television that has left me in a place where I want more, but I also don't feel like I kind of got sold an empty box. Waiting for them to fill it at a later time. So yeah, I think that they've been successful in kind of fulfilling that promise of making me walk away from the episode going, that was good, instead of like, okay, what now? Which is sometimes what happens with modern TV.
It's true. And here's a Vulcan Hello top tip. Don't buy empty boxes unless you're moving.
People have gotten very rich selling companies the equivalent of empty boxes. And then they sell them services with which to fill the empty box.
Yes, let's create the box together.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I mean, people in your line of work sometimes are talked into buying an empty box it's very expensive to fill later with a contract. Yeah.
We're pivoting to an enterprise software podcast.
A little bit. I remember hearing that term somewhere where somebody said, you know, they're basically for $20,000 or whatever, they sell you an empty box, and then you sign a contract for many years of service of them putting things in the box. And I thought,
yes,
kind of accurate, right? Like sometimes, and that's what you don't want, right? You don't want to, you know, I like it as a metaphor because it's that idea of like, I thought I got something, but I didn't get something. I got a container that they promise later they'll put things in. And that as a viewer of TV, you don't want that. You want to walk away feeling satisfied. It's like the Star Wars toys when they had they gave you a cardboard box with a coupon in it saying, we'll give you a toy later. Like, no, nobody wants that. They want the toy. They don't want the box with the promise to get a toy later.
That's true. Or this is related, but not exactly. Nowadays, parents, here's a tip for you. If you're going to buy your children some kind of electronic device, like a video game console or something, carefully open it and update it.
Ah, yes.
And then put it back in, because nowadays, whenever you hook something up, immediately it wants to update itself for like 4 hours. Yeah. And that's very sad when you're just excited to play Mario
Most
Kart or whatever
kids
it is.
Don't get excited about the software update. Some do.
There are some, yes. And if your children are into software updates, disregard my previous advice.
They have a really nice future in IT waiting for them.
They do. I will tell you, and this is a complete tangent again.
That's what people are here for.
Children, it's true. Declan, I have a child, two of them, actually. They are a set because they're twins. They're 3 and a half. Today, Declan said to me, I have to go to work. And he walked down the hallway. And then he came back and he said, I'm done with my podcast.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh, okay.
Nice.
Good job. Hope he has sponsorship. But anyway, imposters. He's not a changeling.
Imposters.
But well, he might be actually, because these new changelings, who knows? They're all over the place. And last week, Jason, you and I said, you know, there was a big war. Changelings were all over the place. Maybe they would have tests for finding changelings.
And they do.
They do. And
they
these
don't
changelings
work.
Are eluding them. Mm. Yes.
This is an evolution of changelings, which explains why the one last time turned into like a side of beef. When it went into the little panels, it looked all meaty instead of just gooey.
Yes.
And they are making organs and stuff so that they can pass. They basically changed their bodies somehow to be more hard to discover, basically.
Right.
They're better at posing as humans now.
Much closer than they were before. It was all surface before, but now they have learned how to do further replication.
Which also means that apparently you can kill them and they stay in that form until you like chop them up into little bits, which is interesting.
That's true. I wonder, the doctor on the Titan is not getting much respect because Beverly Crusher just
She's
shows up and
now.
Is like, I'll take over for now. But,
yeah.
That was one of the big revelations, but it starts off, the episode starts off with good old Jack Crusher killing a bunch of people. And
in an obvious dream.
Yes. And that's where I was like, I don't think he really killed all those people. But it was a dream, and his eyes start to glow red, and he sees those like tendril-y things that he's been seeing. And that continues to happen throughout the episode.
Yes. To the point where at one point when he finds it useful to kill people, he goes with it and uses the whatever that is to
and kills a bunch of
people. Kill four changelings who have beamed on board to kill him, which led thought to a very nice moment, which is like, how did you know they were all changelings?
Yes.
He said, oh, I didn't. But I mean, it's obvious they're coming for him and they're going to take him away, and so he's like, yeah, so I'm going to kill you, but he was not really thinking about these are probably changelings. Well, it doesn't matter. Changelings are sentient creatures. Humans are sentient creatures. If they're coming to kidnap him and take him away, you should fight them anyway. But still, it was a fun moment to tell Mom, oh, no, I just killed him.
All right, because she's – well, that's an interesting thing, though, right? Because the big surprise for me, at least, I don't know, maybe you were thinking Ro Laren would make a cameo appearance in
Star
Trek
Picard. What a good surprise that was.
And she has a lot of very good scenes with Picard and talking about how, you know, your blind obedience to an institution doesn't necessarily mean that you are doing the right thing, right? Or it doesn't mean you're honorable. And that's a little undertone of that conversation with Dr. Crusher and Jack Crusher, because the assumption there is if they weren't shapeshifters, they were Starfleet officers, so you shouldn't kill them because they're on your side. But that is perhaps an erroneous assumption, although we all know they were changelings anyway. But so it's just an interesting theme. Although I should point out, I'm generally against killing people. So
Generally. I mean, if it's killer you killed, you got to do what you got to do. But
that's
true. Generally not.
So there are interesting things. So something's up with Jack.
Yes.
And he's having all kinds of wacky visions, and they're the changelings, and the what ship is it? The Intrepid, the USS Intrepid yeah. shows up, and the security officers don't want to beam over, so they take a little shuttle over, and dun dun dun. It's
we never see the captain. We never see the Intrepid at all. Which I mean, I know it's cheaper. You don't have to cast actors. You don't have to redress the set again. I get it, but like, I also liked how creepy that was, right? Like,
yes,
it makes you not trust them. That they're just sending you text messages saying, please accept our
Let our shuttle in.
Yeah, exactly.
And you would think, so Captain Shaw continues his streak of being annoying, but right. But you would think he might think something's a little fishy about that, mm-hmm. because it seems very strange that they wouldn't, like, you know, there aren't that many Starfleet captains in the world, so you would think they just talk to each other.
So what I am going to say about it is, I think he's worried about playing into, I wasn't going to say a changeling, I was going to say worried about playing into Picard and Riker's hand and getting in trouble. And so I think he wants to play it by the book, and he is going to agree to the request because he knows that they got hijacked basically by Picard and Riker, and that Starfleet wants to know about it. So I think that he goes along for a while of like, I'm not going to make trouble. I'm the one who doesn't make trouble. And of course it gets him in trouble. But I think that I feel like it is fitting that Shaw kind of like goes along with it. I agree. I wanted him to kind of like snap to it a little faster. And instead we sort of have to replay what happened in end of episode one, maybe, where he like eventually finally realizes around. That he needs to kind of get with the program. And I wish he had shown a little more progress, because I got the feeling like he had progressed a little bit last time. I mean, I liked that moment where he's like, I'm going to leave you guys to get your story straight. I thought that was really great.
That was really good. And I liked they were the turbo lift scene where Picard and Riker were like, you know, we've saved the galaxy a few times, so maybe that'll help. And he lists all the things that he said, yeah, that's true, but you also did all these other things, like, you know, crash a saucer into a planet.
I've seen your feature films and your 2-hour series finale. Exactly. Bad stuff happened. Although I think being mean to Picard for kissing that lady on that planet, especially when it turns out that she's actually hundreds and hundreds of years old, I think he could have let that one slide. And they weren't actually a first contact situation, because they're...
It's true.
I think he could have let that go. But thank you for reminding us about Star Trek Insurrection, Captain Shaw. Thank you.
A movie that exists.
It does. It's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm.
It's fine. It's fine. But yeah, and I guess we should point out that Shaw is called Starfleet, because there's a nice scene in the beginning where they're like, yes. Oh, I guess we have to go, you know, take our medicine, and when we go back to Starfleet. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I already called them and they're coming.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as he's reinstated as the captain, he's like, yeah, I called them. They're on their way.
They're coming.
Because this is, you did kind of like lie and steal a shuttlecraft and almost get us all killed. So I called Starfleet. The problem is that Shaw is going by the book, even though there was a changeling on board as a saboteur and all that. He's going by the book. And I feel like, first off, it's useful to have a character like that so that your other characters are kind of opposed to. But I did have that moment where I thought he has to get it, right? He has to get that this is a bigger issue. And the moment that I thought they were going to lean in on, and they sort of touched on it and then they let it go, is Picard's like, how did you get a changeling on board your ship? It's like, that's on you. And I think the implication there is that the changeling was on board the ship before Riker and Picard got on board, which means that it was not caused by them. He already had a changeling on his ship. That seems bad, but Shaw seems to I think he just wants things to go back to the way they were and be normal. And he's not ready until the very end of the episode to realize that he, as much as he doesn't want to be in a Star Trek movie, he's in a Star Trek movie now.
Reluctantly. Yeah. That moment
under
was
protest.
4 changelings on 1 starship.
Yeah. Not good.
It's really 5, but not good. Yeah. So, and the other thing that's happened, there's a lot happening in this episode.
So much.
We've got the continuing adventures of Worf
and Raffi.
Raffi on the only, I guess there's one planet where all the crime is.
Yep. Metallus.
They keep going back to it.
They keep going there. That's where it's not only where the crime is, it's also where her husband is.
Husband, yes. And I did think to myself, why does anyone live on this planet? If you can, especially, why would you have a child on this planet? It just seems strange when their mother is in Starfleet. So one imagines they could move to the Federation, right? Because it's not in the Federation. So I don't understand.
No, I don't know. It's very strange. It's one of those things that the show doesn't really want you to think about a whole lot. Because also, it's like in a zone. So it's like that zone is bad, but then there are other zones. And I think that's where the Federation recruitment thing is. It's in a different zone.
Oh, on the same planet?
I think on the same planet. Oh. I don't know. It's very... And again, I think they don't want to... They really don't want you to think
it doesn't
about
really
it very
matter,
much. Because the truth is, the reason why it's all there is they built one crime... town crime. Set.
Yes.
And so it's all going to happen there. And that's just how it's going to be. I think that's
And
the
I like the look of the set. So I'm not going to play it just, you know, when you think about it as a larger
it's
universe,
a big galaxy,
it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And there's just this one neighborhood where the crime is. Although I want to say, so we get our Vulcan mobster here. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. This is a character who the actor was on 12 Monkeys, and he was on Fringe. He was the friend agent guy on Fringe. Kryn is the name of the Vulcan.
He's a good Vulcan.
And I really enjoy him. I enjoy Vulcan. His moment where he says something like, utopia requires crime, and therefore...
It's logical for me.
Organized crime is logical, and I'm like, I don't think that makes sense, and yet I love it because it's a Vulcan justifying justifying being a criminal and having him be clearly a Vulcan and still following like some tenets of being a Vulcan while also being a criminal. I thought that was hilarious. I loved it.
And Vulcans continue to be space racist because he does not like Worf because he's a Klingon. Mm-hmm. So, and Klingon, the smell of Klingon blood sickens him.
But the Ferengi, that was his Ferengi was like a brother to him, not literally a brother, just like a brother to him.
They grew up together.
Explain that.
They watched watch out for each other. Mm-hmm. Right. He's a great character.
Yeah,
And he
they outlogic each other. He's like, but I know that you know. Mm-hmm. That I know, and that's why. What he didn't know was that
Worf is crazy.
Was going to say stab me, and then I'll pretend like I'm dead, and they'll think I'm dead, and then I'll kill everybody.
Yeah, that old
classic plan.
Chestnut. Yes, exactly. And I did enjoy the fact that Worf pops up behind him and holds a dagger to him, and then he's like, "Let's just skip all this and go to the interrogation. I need urgent medical attention.
Yes, I'm bleeding here." Oh, and he tries to logic out. He's like, "Yeah, but you won't do this because of this." And Rafi says something like, "Yeah, but he's on a clock here because he's bleeding profusely." and the Vulcan's like, "All right, okay, fine. Like, all right, okay, I can provide." And so what he says is Daystrom Station, which they're trying to get to, is protected, because we've heard earlier in the episode they say protected by an AI security system, and you're like,
powerful,
"Oh, that's
AIs,
interesting." But here he says it's an unorthodox AI security system that has some very unorthodox security holes.
Logical security holes.
And if you've seen the trailer for this season of Star Trek Picard, I can think of some candidates for the way you might break through it, and also what the AI security system might be that's so unorthodox. And I'm really sorry that I saw that trailer now, because I would be if it is what I think it's going to be, that what a great little twist that will be. But we already know about certain characters that are in the season, so
I know. It's also kind of a catch-22.
Also,
right?
Yeah. Also, how I know that that Worf didn't actually die there, because there's a scene later where Worf is on the Titan with our friends, so he was not gonna die there. So, you know, again, don't watch the trailers, kids. That's the lesson. Don't watch
Watch the trailers and
then
don't
forget.
Care.
Yeah, or forget.
Well, you know, there was no way Worf was going to die there. Even if you hadn't seen that scene, you wouldn't be like, "Well, I guess Worf is dead."
No, death's reserved for guest stars on single episode appearances.
And still affecting or effective, but we'll get to that.
Yes. Anyway, I like the Vulcan gangster, and now they're by the end of the episode after lots of text message communication, Worf just literally just opens up a phone call to the data that is Picard and Riker have. But still, we've got the two plot lines intersect at that point, which is good.
Finally.
I actually really appreciated that, because there's the logic of, like, our characters don't know everything that the viewers know, that there's that moment where they explain about the terrorist bombing, and Picard doesn't know about that, and it's like putting the pieces together. That was a good, like, we've been following that plot line, but Picard and Riker have been busy, you know, trying not to die, and they missed that.
And creating the other plot line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like that, and I like, so I assume next episode Worf and Raffi will come aboard the Titan.
I assume so.
I'm assuming the Titan is going to Metallus Prime, probably.
Yeah, or they're going to meet them at Daystrom Station, because remember that Worf and Raffi have the Lost Serena.
They have the... And they got the little whatever a logic chip to break through the
magic
the AI.
Yeah,
and I did enjoy that part where Rafi's like, "So you're going to give us the device you have?" And he says, "Yeah, it is logical." And just here, take it, leave me alone.
Yep,
leave the planet
or
the district or whatever, wherever we
are.
Please
leave. Metallus Prime.
So yeah, that's all. So let's talk about Ro. And
yes, Michelle Forbes, great to see her again. One of the great like sort of unfollowed threads of Next Generation.
Yes, and a character who was interesting on Next Generation in that she didn't really feel like a Next Generation character. She felt like a Deep Space Nine character who was on the wrong show.
Yeah.
She was almost the whole point.
I think she was almost wasn't it? She was supposed to be on Deep Space Nine, and Michelle Forbes wasn't interested because she was going to be the Kira part, and that didn't work out because Michelle Forbes, especially, I don't know, I think this is still true, but certainly she's been on some shows, but like she tends to not be on a show very long. That is her MO, is that you know, she was on Homicide: Life on the Street too, and it was the same thing. They introduced her and it's like, oh, here's Michelle Forbes, she's the new coroner, and like eight episodes later it's like, goodbye, she's leaving. So I think that Michelle Forbes just didn't stick around on shows and was not interested in committing to 7 years on Deep Space Nine, and so they they basically wrote her, had her join the McKee and wrote her out that way, and that was it. And so and she was set up. I mean, the truth of the story was that she was set up as this character who could kind of like give it back to Picard, and that they were going to grow to have a good mentor-mentee relationship, but also that it would be fraught with difficulty and all that. And instead, you know, they ended up having that episode where she basically betrays everything and joins the Maquis, and left it there. So a very nice area to mine for character in Star Trek Picard, and I'm so glad that they got her. It was great to see her. I knew almost right away that like she was probably not going to make it out of the episode, because I thought, well, this is her episode. She's going to be in it, and then she's not sticking around for the rest of it. They've kept this a secret, but it's not going to last, right? She's not in the rest of the show. And that is true, because she dies at the end. But they get to have their...
Heroically.
And they get to have their emotional match, you know, conversations that I think are, again, yeah, they're shorthand because we know she's only signed up for an episode. There's some shorthand to get them where they are, but I really liked that, she's the first one actually who's like, I'm going to take him to the holodeck and we're going to test this out, where like they don't trust each other because they could be changelings. And it's their kind of anger against each other that proves that they're on the same side, but they're also angry with each other. And I thought that was great. I thought that was a really great way to have the tension of the moment up against this character stuff and having those things be the unresolved history and the tension of the moment together, I thought was good.
Yes, and I thought the episode was cleverly constructed to kind of slowly show us, like, so Picard is testing her to see if she's a changeling, and she's doing the same to him. And we're watching as we, you know, in parallel, we find out that the normal tests don't work on these new changelings. And so, like, as soon as you find that out, she cuts her hand to show him that she's not a changeling. And he's like, all right. And then he gets a text message from Beverly and decides to read it, like, on the giant wall.
Yeah.
Which is not so subtle. But and she's like, you know, don't trust anybody again. This time I mean it. So I thought that was all good. I never really for a moment thought she was a changeling. But I did immediately assume that those security guards with her were changelings. And they were. So
yeah.
And I did like the holodeck conversations and him slyly turning off the safety protocols on the holodeck so he could shoot her if he needs to. Although I did think they should probably be, should be harder to disengage the safety protocols on the holodeck than pressing one button.
Well, I imagine that's a, again, my headcanon is that that's Picard. Like, Picard has set it up that way for instances such as this. He does a gesture or whatever, and he can get to that button. But
he's an adrenaline junkie. He doesn't want the, his simulations to be too simulated.
I don't know. When he needs it, when he needs it. You could argue that when they say computer disengage safety protocols, that it should probably not say okay. It should probably be like, no. Do you have approval from the captain for this?
I am the captain.
Oh. Do you have the approval from your Commodore for that?
Oh. And Picard has killed a bunch of people on the holodeck, so I guess he wants to keep it in his back pocket.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes you gotta kill some Borgs with a machine gun.
That's right. Little Tommy gun and wipe them all out.
Yeah, it's how you got to do it. So yeah, so having her come back and having him be like, "How are you even in Starfleet now?" And she tells the story and like the skepticism of it, of like, this doesn't really make sense, and you know, but that's the beauty of it, is that it doesn't make sense. You wouldn't make it up, but this is what it is, and that she's actually been the one, it turns out, who's been working with Worf and Raffi, and she's in Starfleet Intelligence, and she's come a long way because it's been 30 years, right? It's been 30 years.
People change, as we keep saying.
Yeah, exactly right. And one of Picard's flaws seems to be that he keeps, I feel like this might even be a commentary about viewers, right? Which is, he keeps thinking about people as they were when they were on the show, right? Basically. Mm-hmm. And the lesson that the show keeps saying is they're not like that anymore, because this is 30 years later. They're all different now. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. I thought she did a great job. I thought it was interesting how she goes out, right? Where she's basically like, because it's one of those things where it's like, well, what's the logic in putting a bomb on the thing, on the shuttlecraft, and then beaming out if the bomb doesn't go off right away, so that she can fly back and ram your ship and ram one of the nacelles. I'm not sure I entirely understood that. I also kind of was hoping, again, you know, against hope, that she would like blow herself out into space so she could get picked up or something like that. But that also doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot, because they could just shoot her and land the shuttlecraft, because they control the ship they're going to. So it's not like anyone's going to be like, hey.
Right. So why do they beam out and blow it up? And I guess what they said is that they're trying to frame the Shaw and the Titan for it by doing that they blew up the security ship. And
but how would they know that she was going to? Oh, I guess they if she didn't ram the Intrepid, they could just say, oh, the Titan blew up
because they blew up, up
to no good. And
exactly,
because so
they're the bad ones here. That was was part of the plot. But it happens really sudden. And again, I sort of like shrug it off and say, well, there's some shorthand here. And it's fine, because what we got was a good set of conversations between these two characters who are, you know, still trying to understand each other to the end.
And a very nice final conversation where he says, I see you finally. I'm sorry it took me so long, but I see you. And I thought that was very nice. And it's a continuing theme with Picard of, you know, you said he's treating everyone as they were 30 years ago, but he's not the best at kind of human interactions and relationships. True. And this just continues to show up, because, you know, 30 years, like, it was clear that his relationship with Ro meant a lot to him, and then she betrayed him, and so he thinks. But then he just never thinks of her for 30 years, and never thinks, maybe I should look and see where Ro ended up.
Right.
I'm an admiral. And I buy that he totally wouldn't do that, because that is a Picard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But it's just an interesting kind of meditation on his character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's not interested in legacy. Don't worry. He wants
to. No. Not at all. Not at all.
But I did like that she handed him her Bajoran earring, which is, you know, a big thing for them. And he's like, I do think it was kind of strange. Like, it was clear she's in Starfleet Intelligence. She's handing him a thing. Of course it has data on it. you would know that Picard, but apparently he's like, I don't know why she gave me this.
Well, he's all caught up in the emotions of it, right? Whereas Riker is just like, I got an idea, right? Like Riker sees right through it. I'm willing to say that that's Picard just getting kind of caught up in the moment.
I guess so. Maybe it's a bit sentimental.
Yeah, exactly.
It's this little sentimental gesture. He's like, eh, maybe there's some data on here, and there is lots of data. And
it's her like conspiracy yarn wall.
That's true. Hollow yarn wall. Mm-hmm. Plus, it is equipped with zoom because, as we said mm-hmm. earlier, Worf zooms in and it's set to auto pickup, I guess, which also seems like an odd choice.
Again, my headcanon there is that at this point, if it's not Ro and it's her backup that she's set, that is like the emergency backup, that sure. This is what it's supposed to do is say like something happened to her, accept the call or whatever, right? Like mm-hmm. this is the I need to connect you with my people because I trusted you enough to give you this thing. I don't know. That's what we have.
It's fine. It doesn't really matter because it gives us Worf and Picard and Riker talking to each other, which was very nice. And they kind of quickly explain what's going on. And Worf is like, oh, boy.
Yep.
I've got stuff. And speaking of getting stuff, Jack has stuff. He's got something's going on with Jack. He's had numerous kind of hallucinations.
Yeah. Visions, dreams, episodes, hallucinations, something like that.
Of killing multiple Starfleet officers,
yes.
And doing strange things. And I thought it was nice that, he doesn't wear a uniform because he's not in Starfleet. And then Picard asks Seven to hide him away, and she says, okay, I'll hide him away, and hands him the uniform that he saw himself in his vision where he was killing people. So I thought that was nice. And yeah, he's like, oh boy, I don't want to put this on.
I agree. So yeah, and tendrils and stuff. So what's going on with Jack?
I don't know. Should we fire off the conspiracy phaser and go into the conspiracy closet and talk about it? Are there any other moments in the show you would like to talk about before we scuttle off to conspiracy corner?
No, I think we could scuttle off to conspiracy corner now if scuttling is our choice of locomotion.
Scuttling is always my choice. So here we go. These are completely unfounded theories by us. So if you don't want to be sullied by that, stop listening now. All right, so is he a changeling is the question that I want to know.
I don't think so.
What's the red door mean? That's the, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be one of these things that is going to be like obvious when they tell us what it is, but I don't know what it is.
So I have here's my best theory right now. My best theory is that this is, I don't like this theory, but I'm trying to game out what is going on. My mm-hmm. theory is that it's Picard related.
Oh.
That it's his son that's the issue. I got two theories. So one of them is it's Picard related. It's his son. I kind of want to say like something happened to Picard when he was made into Locutus of Borg.
Oh.
And that there is value in that either from the Borg or from the changelings, that somebody finds that value. And Picard himself doesn't have his physical body anymore, right? He's now a synthesoid or whatever.
He's a synthahol, Picard.
But he has a son, and so like, and again, does the logic work there? Well, they'll say like magic. It was inserted in your DNA. It's a magical thing, and then you passed it on to
just like your accent,
your child, just like your accent. Yes, it's in the DNA. So that's one theory I have, is that it's Picard. It'll all come back to him being Picard's kid after all.
Mm-hmm. Beverly was right.
Yeah, and that this is they can't get it from Picard, so they have to get it from Picard's son. And once they realize that he's Picard's son, that's what they're going to do. So that's one thought. Mm-hmm. Another thought I had is that it is related, that it's related to the Daystrom thing, that we've been given these like hints about this whatever has been kept at Daystrom, but what if it's a misdirect, and you know whatever got stolen out of Daystrom got into him in some way, and now is right, and so that he is the weapon, or he has the weapon inside him. And that's another theory I've got, is that it turns out that like when he was on one of his, you know, Han Solo-esque missions, that he ended up picking up something that he shouldn't have, and it's driving him crazy. because he's possessed or he's got a thing in him or who knows. I don't know what is possession, but you got a thing in you. I was just, you know, like, I don't know, a bug, a symbiote, a worm. I don't know. Anything. He's got a thing.
Well, we are in conspiracy corner.
And so it's right.
It could be a conspiracy worm.
It could be
worm.
A conspiracy worms are the prime protein source of conspiracy corner. So those are my kind of like two big possibilities. Is it's something that is because he's Picard's son, or it's something he kind of like he picked up on one of his journeys and didn't realize it, but that's what they want. Because I have a hard time believing that the reason that the changelings and company want him is not exactly this, right? Which is whatever is causing the red lights and the visions and the tendrils and all of that and his ability to kill
powers
for changelings. So is he a changeling? My guess is no, although I keep waiting for that, you know, that moment where there's the revelation that like, oh, this is not actually Beverly's son. He was replaced by a changeling, but he seems very much like he is. And they like killed changelings and stuff. So I feel like probably probably not that, but I don't know. It's those aren't great guesses, right? Like I like the fact that I'm guessing, but I don't have like a high degree of confidence in any of those. I think that they're playing it to coy enough that it makes it a lot harder to guess what's going on with Jack Crusher.
I agree. And I think they want us to think he might be a changeling because of he hears a voice as well that says like, join us.
Oh, and it's Beverly's voice now. It was much clearer this time that that is absolutely Beverly's voice. And what does that mean, right?
I don't know. So yeah, I have no idea who he is. I feel like I should have a better guess, but I do not.
Right.
I'm interested to see what this red door is and what these tendrils mean. But I think you're right that the reason he's interesting to people is because of this. And I don't know what it is. I kind of hope that it has nothing to do with the fact that he's Picard's son and that Picard is just involved in this because he is Picard. And
yes.
It's just kind of a coincidence.
Well, yeah. Well, no, that Picard got drawn into it because this thing happened with his son. Not that that it's because he's his son.
Exactly. But he's not the central figure in the story. No. He's just there because his son is the central figure in the story. I mean, he's a central figure in the show, of course, because his name is in the title, but in the overall story.
Yeah, he gets brought into it. And that's the problem, is that the guy, one guy in all the galaxy that they need to get, that the changelings need to get, and it's Jean-Luc Picard's son. Right? If that is the case, you know, that's my guess is that it's not like we needed him to get to you or whatever. It's that something weird is going on with him. I think that's clear now. And he says that to his mom. And what is that? I think that's
he's very wrong with him.
Yeah. And it's good that we're at the halfway point and I don't know. Like, I don't know quite what they've kept that secret enough. And I like it. I like that I am left kind of baffled about exactly what's going on. Because that's the trick with storytelling like this, is you want it to seem in retrospect plausible, but you don't want it to be that like everybody on Reddit guesses it in episode one.
Yes, that would be unfortunate.
Yeah.
You want them to guess some things, right? Because as a viewer, you feel better about yourself when you're like, aha, clever writers, I'm smarter than you.
And they seem to, yeah, right. I mean, I think I read somewhere that somebody said that the best mystery novels are where the reader figures it out, like the page before the characters figure it out, because then the readers feel all good about themselves. And that is, I think that there's some truth to that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a fine line to walk because you don't want it to feel like a ripoff, but you don't want it to be obvious where everybody guesses it. And I think that I'm sure somebody out there has guessed it because there's an infinite number of monkeys typing in the conspiracy corner.
It's big here.
It's
in
over
the conspiracy
there.
Corner.
Conspiracy facers are every infinite number of monkeys have an infinite number of conspiracy facers. One of them is going to be right, but which one? That's the trick.
It's always the trick.
Yeah, isn't it? With all those monkeys. So anyway, I like that. I like that we just don't know. And it still could be something wild and out of left field. But these producers have done a good job at selectively leaking and not leaking. So the Michelle Forbes thing is a really great example of that, where like they have done in the trailers, we've seen Moriarty and we've seen Lore and we've seen Geordi, and we know that all these you know, all these things are coming up because they're in the trailer. But Ensign/Commander Laren? No, we didn't get that one. That was a complete surprise. And like, I think that's, as a modern TV person, I think that's kind of what you got to do, is you've got to like, what info are we either going to leak, going to choose to leak, or we can't not leak. Or, you know, it's going to come out. Mm-hmm. And then what can we protect so that you end up, you know, saving some surprises for people, like having Ro show up in this episode, because that was great. And I'm so happy that that was a surprise. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I even read a little spoilery discussion in the Incomparable Slack before I watched the show. So I knew she was going to be in it, and I was still surprised because I got drawn into the episode and I forgot. And then I was like, oh, this is where she comes in.
Yeah.
So it was still a nice surprise, even though I knew she was coming into the episode. So,
well, you shouldn't read those spoiler threads before you see it, Scott. Come on.
Well, I don't care about spoilers, Jason.
Okay,
so.
That's good. That's just fine.
It's fine. It's a continuum.
I like the hanging the lantern on the, why don't we just call Admiral Janeway? And the response is, well, if you can get to her through her people, right? Like, which is, that's the idea, right? Is that, oh, I've got somebody I could trust who's in a position of authority. Well, how do you, if there's a conspiracy going on, they prevent you from reaching them. That's the, that's the method there. So I like that.
And as we've said before, Starfleet in general is not the most secure organization.
No.
And changelings, these new evolved changelings, there was that moment when Beverly Crusher was like, they could be anyone, which is, of course, the whole point. So this is a very effective enemy for an organization that is notoriously poorly secured. So you could never trust anyone anyway, because who knows what the heck is going on.
Yeah. Although apparently there's no DNA, so...
Maybe that's the best
approach. Who knows? I don't know. You can't scan their organs, but you can scan their DNA. So that maybe that's enough. Although maybe not. Maybe they fake the DNA too when they're alive, and it's only when they're dead that they don't. Look, the changelings are undetectable until they need to be detected, right?
Until the plot demands that they can be detected,
and then they can be detected. Fine. So that was that's the.
And I'm okay with that, because I think that, as we said last time, like, changelings as an enemy is a horrifying concept, because you can't trust anyone, because anyone could be, you know, it's a deep seated fear in all of humans that, you know, everyone is out to get you, and you know, people aren't what they seem, and all of this stuff. So it's a very effective way of making it very creepy.
Oh, and clearly Frontier Day or whatever it is.
Oh, yes.
When every ship in the fleet is going to be in one place for a parade.
Seems a bad idea.
Is going to be the Well, it seems like a bad idea, but if you've got changelings in high positions in Starfleet,
making the bad things,
they're doing it on purpose, right? That's the whole idea, is that it's just a plausible way to get everybody together so that they can strike at the Federation and blow up all of Starfleet and stuff like that. So I'm willing to go with it, but certainly that's where this whole story is going to end up, right? Is that the
finale will be Frontier Day.
It's got to be, right?
And they will be on Earth by that. Was it Rachel Garrett? Is that the statue that they keep showing? Although she was outside of the recruitment center.
So of the recruitment center. So a different thing.
It'll be Zephyrin Cochran statue.
The Jonathan Archer statue, something like
that. Oh, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they'll be, you know, I did like, Picard was like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to give a speech there.
Yeah, good callback. Yeah.
All the important people are supposed to give speeches because you're all going to die.
Yeah, that's right. They want them all there.
Just like Star Trek VI.
Maybe Picard's speech ends up being the big finale of the last episode. And he's like, haha, we figured you out. And let me tell you why. That's it. He comes up to the lectern and the whole Starfleet is there. And he's like, I bet you're wondering why I called you. But someone here is a changeling.
What?
And it's all of you. I am the only one left. And then he kills everybody.
Whoa.
Yeah. But they're all changelings, so it's okay.
Oh, that's right. We don't care if the changelings die.
No, if they die, it's fine. It's like, how did you know? He's like, I knew they were all changelings. Well, this guy wasn't. Oh, well, that's too bad.
Other than him.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what we'll get to. But like, I'm enjoying the ride, and I know enough about I can make some guesses of the shape of what's to come, but like, it's all still, it's all still out there. It could go in any number of interesting ways, and I like that about it too. So it's good. Even when I try to analyze it and think what's happening next, I can't go that far with it. I've got a bunch of different options and things I haven't even thought about. And that's good. I'm enjoying the ride. That's what it should be like.
Yeah, and we still have some original TNG cast that have yet to placed on the board, so that's exciting. We'll see in coming episodes where Geordi shows up and Worf will get to meet Picard and Riker and Beverly. And Deanna has to show up.
Yep, she does. And then and Chief O'Brien and Tasha and Wesley.
I have to think that Chief O'Brien is going to show up, but I have nothing other than my longing for it to be true to base that on. But
I did. So I read somewhere where somebody speculated that there's got to be somebody from Deep Space Nine. I mean, not Worf. There's got to be somebody from Deep Space Nine who shows up.
There are a lot of connections to Deep Space Nine.
Right.
So
much of the season is about changelings and all that. And, and sadly, Renee Auberjonois is dead, so they can't have Odo come back. And my understanding is that Avery Brooks is retired and doesn't
not so interested
anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, there's still several other actors from that show who could make an appearance here or there.
Yes. Who I'm sure would be happy for the work and happy to make their character come back. So,
yeah. Absolutely. So maybe we'll get some more surprises. That would be kind of fun.
It would be very funny if they go to the transporter room and Chief O'Brien is just there and they don't even mention it and he just works the transporter and they go down and that's fine.
Maybe the changeling at the heart of it all just prefers to look like Chief O'Brien. He's not Chief O'Brien, but he likes to be Chief O'Brien.
Wouldn't you like to be Chief O'Brien? I think Picard has had lots of awful things happen to him as a character, but they have really tortured the character of Chief O'Brien.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate Deep Space Nine way to end the show is to reveal Chief O'Brien as the master architect of the entire plan, and it turns out he's a changeling, and the real Chief O'Brien has been locked up in a changeling jail cell for the last 20 years, and he emerges and he's like, again!
With a giant beard.
Yeah, again with a jail cell.